Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 15, Verse Number 40. Visrijya tatra tat sarvam dukula valayadikam nirmamo nirahankara sanchinaseya sanchinna se sabandana. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Yudhisthira at once relinquished all his garments, belt, and ornaments of the royal order and became completely disinterested and unattached to everything. Purport by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. To become purified of material contamination is the necessary qualification for becoming one of the associates of the Lord. No one can become an associate of the Lord or can go back to Godhead without such purification. Maharaj Yudhisthira, therefore, to become spiritually pure, at once gave up his royal opulence, relinquishing his royal dress and garments. The kshaya, or saffron loincloth of a sannyasi, indicates freedom from all attractive material garments. And thus, he changed his dress accordingly. He became disinterested in his kingdom and family, and thus became free from all material contaminations or material designation. People who are generally attached to various kinds of designations, the designations of family, society, country, occupation, wealth, position, and many others. As long as one is attached to such designations, he is considered materially impure. The so-called leaders of men in the modern age are attached to national consciousness, but they do not know that such false consciousness is also another designation of the materially conditioned soul. One has to relinquish such designations before one can become eligible to go back to Godhead. Foolish people adore such men who die in national consciousness. But here is an example of Maharaja Yudhisthira, a royal king who prepared himself to leave the world without such national consciousness. And yet he is remembered even today because he was a great pious king, almost on the same level with the personality of Godhead, Sri Rama. And because people of the world were dominated by such pious kings, they were happy in all respects, and it was quite possible for such great emperors to rule the world. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So again, Prabhupada explains in one of his letters that GBC means everybody is happy in the temple. So, how do you make someone happy? In Kali Yuga, it's not easy. People have so many material desires. They're not very easily really happy. They go from one desire to the next, and it's unending. But in the eulogy of Bhakti Sri Maharaj, if we change our desires from desiring material things for our own personal satisfaction to desiring to please Krishna in thousands and millions of different ways, like distributing his books, or worshiping the deity, or cooking for the deity, or cleaning the temple for the deity, or offering money to the deity, all these different ways, glorifying the deity with choice poetry, Vedic verses, and so forth, written by pure devotees. If we change our desire from desiring for ourselves to desiring for Krishna, then there's no limit to how much such desires will be satisfied by Krishna. But if we desire things for ourselves, we cannot get more. No matter what we do, no matter how many parikramas, how many Bhakti Shastri degrees or Bhakti Vedanta degrees, no matter how many pujas we perform, we will not get more than what we deserve due to our karma. And that's very limited. And there'll be some good things and some bad things, but nothing more. You won't get one thing more or one thing less by doing all those other things. That's explained in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, verse 32 to 35. So, therefore, changing the quality of our desires, not like the Mayavadi, eliminating all desires. That's imperfect vairagya or renunciation. But changing the quality of our desires from desiring for ourselves in different ways, for sense gratification in this way, that way, and becoming free of all false designations. These are called upadis. False designations, identifying self with the body and the extension of the body in the form of family, in the form of ethnicity, in the form of nation, or in the form of universal so-called humanity or whatever. All those things are designations. They're false. They have nothing to do with our soul or our relationship of our eternal soul with Krishna. So here we see a practical example in Maharaj Parikshit, who is not an old man. He's still relatively young. But he has decided, I'm going to give up all these material things and prepare myself for death. And that preparation has to be a very sincere and serious decision that we make. And it doesn't matter how old you are. If you're 20 years old and you're only going to live 2 more years, you're an old man already, or old woman. And if you're 80 years old and you're going to live another 30 years, you're still young. You see? So we don't know how long we're going to live. So we should assume that we could die at any minute. Therefore, we should always be prepared. It could be an accident, it could be an earthquake, whatever. It's very easy to die in this material world. That's why in the Bible, one of the commandments is, thou shalt not kill. That means that people were killing each other a lot 2,000 years ago. And if you go to the Holy Land today, in other words, you go to what's called Israel or Palestine, people are still killing each other. And they're killing each other all over the world. So this killing has not stopped. And therefore, we live in dangerous times, and there are many dangerous people. I was recently reading a biography, an autobiography by a devotee, by a devotee who was in the Mayapur Gurukul. That's one of the worst things I ever read in my life. What happened to that poor kid, right? I'm not going to explain it. It's horrifying. And this is something that happened in our movement. And it's happening all over the world. So many people's lives are ruined when they're still children. And then they have to live with that horror the rest of their life. Now, I did once meet a Gurukul alumni who was seriously mistreated in the Gurukul. But he was a very enlightened person. And I met him when he was 28. And he had no frustration or anger or resentment. He had forgiven everyone that mistreated him in very bad, very, very bad ways. You can't even talk about it in the temple. And he had become he had gone to school and become a social worker, and he was helping other people who had been, seriously hurt in their younger years. And he was serving, he and I were up all night cooking for Rath Yatra in San Francisco. And in the middle of the night, around 2 o'clock, he started talking about his experiences. And I was shocked. But then he explained that he forgave everyone that hurt him. And he had been able to meet some of those people later on when he was grown up. And he explained to them that he forgave them and he was not holding any grudge against them. This person was highly elevated devotee, very, very, let's say, exceptional person. So in life, we're going to be confronted with many difficult situations. We have to learn to tolerate, we have to learn to forgive, and we have to learn to go forward progressively in our spiritual life. We cannot hold on to resentment our whole lifetime. That'll hold us back from going back to Godhead. Our mind should be completely clear of all those types of thoughts, whether it's designations due to bodily identification. Just like recently, I was speaking to a person who was very, very insulted by something that happened in our movement. And they went on and on and without stopping for anything for a long time, complaining about how is it possible that devotees who are chanting Hare Krishna for 20, 30, 40 years and they act like that and this and that, and explaining how much they were hurt. And I said, but you were not hurt. He said, what are you talking about? I'm not hurt. How do you know? Well, I said, what's hurt is not you. I said, if you have a toothache, you can point to what's hurt. You can point to the tooth that hurts. But if you go to the doctor and say, I'm hurting very much, I'm suffering terribly. And he said, okay, where is it? He said, well, it's somewhere in my body. I'm not exactly sure. He said, well, what is it? Did you have an accident? He said, no. Did someone hit you? No. Did you fall down? No. Did you eat something and your stomach hurts? No. He said, what happened? It was somebody insulted me. Oh, okay. Well, where does it hurt? Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's right here. So the doctor did a, you know, MRI and a ultrasound and an X-ray. He said, your heart's functioning perfectly. Yeah, okay, then maybe it's up here. So they did ultrasound, they did MRI, they did X-ray. And they said, your head is perfectly okay. You don't have any blood clots, nothing. So where does it hurt exactly? So I don't know. It just hurts. What is actually hurt? It's the false ego that's all hurts. And it's something false. It's not something real, you see. And the whole thing is false. Your soul can never be hurt. It can never be withered by the wind. It can never be burned by fire. It's never born and it never dies. So the soul is never affected. But what is affected is something that's false. It's called the false ego. That's why, even though we talk about eight elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, but there's only seven coverings of the material universe. Which covering is missing? The false ego. Because it's something false. It's something that doesn't really exist. You see? But yet, we're willing to kill when we think that our false ego has been insulted. Right? And people kill easily. So, and or we hold on to a grudge or a resentment our whole life. The last thing before a person dies, I hate this person, I'll never forgive them. You know, I've made a vow never to forgive them. But if you die with a feeling like that, you take birth again. In fact, what's very interesting, I was recently reading something Prabhupada wrote in a letter, and he said that oftentimes, if you cheat someone in a business transaction, let's say, they'll take birth as your child in the next life. And they'll cause you unending misery. Can you imagine how horrible it is? This person that you cheated takes birth as your son or your daughter and completely turns against you at some point and makes you suffer like anything. So you see, the laws of karma are very, very strange and we shouldn't play around with it. We should become completely free of this, what you call resentment, hatred, envy, lust, all these things. So here, in this verse today, Maharaj Yudhisthira, he takes off his royal robes and he, becomes basically completely renounced. Not attached at all. And he's going to walk away. Walk away completely without any attachment. However, he's transferred all his attachment to Krishna. And that is what is necessary if we want to go back to Godhead. If we want to stay in this material world, we'll continue arguing, fighting, finding fault. Prabhupada wrote a letter to this one lady, and he told her, oh, you're complaining so much about the devotees, but that's not the way you can correct someone. You don't correct someone by criticizing. You correct someone by showing the right example. So he said, rather than criticize, you show the example. Okay. So, what is that? Amanitvam, Adamitvam, Ahimsa Shantir Arjavam, Acharya Pasamam Sochyam, Staryam Atma Vinigraha. So, these are very important. The first and foremost quality that we must develop is Amanitvam, humility. Shrinadapi suni chena tarurapi sestana mani namanadena kirtaniya sadahari. One should feel lower than the straw on the street, more tolerant than a tree who never protests. And one should be ready to offer respect to everyone, even those persons who don't respect you. Why should we respect everyone? Because Krishna is in the heart of everyone. If you are a pujari, and you recognize that Krishna is on the altar, and you should behave very nicely and respect the presence of the Lord, but then you mistreat other people, then you have failed as a pujari, because Krishna is in, that same Krishna is in the heart of every living entity. Therefore, we should be respectful to everyone. And if you disrespect people, that means that you are on the lowest level of Kanista Adhikari. Kanishtha Adhikaris respect the deity, but oftentimes they don't respect others. So they are at the bottom end of Kanishtha and ready to go even lower because of their offenses. So we should never offend anyone. We should always be respectful. We should always speak gently and kindly. We should be a well-wisher, just like Prabhupada would sign his letters. Your ever well-wisher, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. So, to be a well-wisher of everyone is the quality of a devotee. Therefore, it says, amanitvam, humility. Adamitvam, freedom from false pride. Oh, I'm better than you, you don't know this, you don't know that, you're born in this family, I'm born in this other family. All that is nonsense. And amanitvam, adamitvam, ahimsa, and you have to be peaceful. In other words, you have to be satisfied by being Krishna conscious, not satisfied because you own this, you own that, or this, you have this prestige or that prestige. No, you should be satisfied just on the basis of acquired knowledge and realization and Krishna consciousness, and that happens by chanting sincerely the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and associating very nicely with other devotees and maintaining a high standard of following the regulative principles. And then you become satisfied in your heart. It doesn't matter what's happening in the world. You continue with your service. And no one can obstruct you from serving. You're not disturbed by anybody in your service because you're serving Krishna. You're not going to say, oh, I'm not going to do this anymore. Because this person did that. That means you're stopping your service to the deities? Because somebody said something the wrong way to you? Or someone did something that you didn't like? And you're going to punish Krishna for that? No. You have to tolerate. Matrasparsastakonteya sitosna sukadukadaha. Agamapayano nisitas tams titikshasvabharata. You have to be titikshava. You have to tolerate so many things. This is an imperfect world. Nothing is perfect here, nor is there any perfect person in this world. So you have to learn to tolerate so many things, especially if you're a devotee. Look at what happened to Prahlad Maharaj. He didn't make any mistake. His only mistake was he was a devotee, and his father wanted to kill him for it. But yet, after his father was killed by Nisringadev, Prahlad and Nisringadev offered any benediction to Prahlad. And the only thing he asked for was, you please bring my father back and save him. And Lord Nishinagadev smiled. He said, well, Prahlad, not only your father is saved, but 21 generations in your family are already saved because you're a pure devotee. So you see, we should follow the example of Prahlad, even though his father and mother tried every way they could to kill him. He didn't have any anger toward them because he depended completely on Krishna. So when you, just like in America, if you have something, you get screwed. If you have nothing, you get everything for free. You see. If you go to a social worker and say, I don't have anything. I don't have a house. I don't have salary. I don't have good health. They'll start giving you things for free. Right? Rent the basement. In other words, you get subsidized rent or no rent. You get Medicare, Medicaid, all the levels of Medicare, Medicaid, which costs a lot of money. For a normal person, you get them all free. And then you get food stamps for free and traveling expenses for free. You get everything for free if you have nothing. And if you have something, you get screwed. You go to a hospital one time, it costs $1,000, right? And you have to pay, otherwise they pursue you, right? That's because you have something, like a house or you have some salary, right? But if you have nothing at all, they give you everything for free in America. So all you have to do is leave America, walk across the border in the south, like in New Mexico, from Mexico. You get everything for free. They even give you the right to vote, even though you're not a citizen, right? And they'll pay for your education, right? Because you have nothing. Well, if you are a Kinchana Gochara, you completely depend on Krishna. And you have nothing material that you're proud about. You give everything to Krishna, like, because he's Chorastakam, he's the chore, he's the thief, he's stealing everything, right? But actually, giving to Krishna is not stealing. Just like Bali Maharaj, Krishna took everything from him. But Bali Maharaj said, wait a minute, you didn't take everything. You didn't take me, so now I'm giving myself to you. So he gave everything to Krishna, and what happened? He got something that nobody else has, an eternal planet in the material world. Right? And Krishna's there also with him all the time. So there is a great benefit, and Prabhupada says it's better to be poor, because then you depend on Krishna. Now how do you become poor? Well, if you give everything away to Krishna, just like we're reading the Charastakam, Krishna is stealing everything, right? But actually, that's not stealing. That is benefiting you, so you don't become a victim of your own false ego. Everyone is victimized by their own false ego in this world. That's why they're fighting. Pakistan, Hindustan, Hindustan, this stan, that stan. They're all fighting. They're killing each other, right? And why? Because of false identification with the body. So, unless we understand these things, rest of our life we'll be fighting. And we'll be upset. Oh, this person said that, and this person did this, and this temple is not good, and that temple is not good. I'm not going to stay here anymore. I'm going to go away. All this is based on the false ego. There's no real basis for it. Therefore, it says, Amanitman, Adamitman. Ahimsa, one should be peaceful. One should be satisfied simply with minimum material needs and the maximum giving to Krishna. And that way, we don't have anything to worry about. Just like there was this one family, and they were relatively poor, but the husband and wife worked very hard, and they got a sewing machine, and they would sew things. Day and night, you know, the father would sew, and then he'd go to sleep, and then the wife would sew, then she'd wake up, and then he would wake up, and she'd go to sleep, and then he would sew. So 24 hours they were working sewing. And over a number of years, they'd developed a lot of money working like that, day and night, 24 hours, right? And eventually, they were going to buy a nice house. They were living in one little, like a one-room house. They decided to buy a nice house. And but right when they were picking a house to buy, and they found a really nice one, some thieves came into the neighborhood of that richer neighborhood, and they killed some people and stole everything. They killed a few of these rich people, right? They didn't come to the poor section where they were living because they don't have anything to steal. And they got a chill down their backs. They said, my God, like, look what happened to those people, you know? They had these beautiful houses, and the thieves came there and robbed them and killed them. So they got scared, so they went to see a priest. And they said, they explained, you know, that they had worked hard day and night, 24 hours a day for so many years, and they collected this money. They were thinking of buying a big house, and then this thing happened. It scared them. They asked, what should we do? So the priest said, look, you saw what just happened. So if you have such a big house, it could happen to you also. He said, best thing to do, you know, our church is very poor, but that's all right. But there are a lot of poor children, and some of them, just like now, that rich family was killed, but their children were not killed. They're orphans. So there are a lot of orphans in our area. Why don't you build a nice house for the orphans? And they were thinking, because they didn't have any children, they were just working day and night. They said, but who's going to manage the house? I will manage the house, the priest said. I'll make sure that it's used only for their benefit. And you don't have any children, but very quickly we could have 30 children in the orphanage. And you'll have 30 kids. You can come and visit them, and they will love you. So they said, let us think about this. So they went home to their little hut, and with that one sewing machine, they were thinking about it. And they came back to the priest, and they said, we will do it. And they gave him the money, and he built a very nice orphanage. And those people were happy the rest of their life, because now they had 30 children. And they used their money in a way that had some meaning to it. So being poor is not a bad thing. And earning money is not a bad thing. But using the money only for sense gratification is very bad. But using it to help others, especially in Krishna consciousness, that's the best use of money. So we all need a minimum to maintain ourselves. But Prabhupada's point is that devotees should live with a minimum so they can give maximum to serving Krishna. That should be our way of living. So Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you very much. Are there any questions? All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Bol. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama.